Welcome to this episode of Reading Beyond the Lines. I'll be joined by two students today for a discussion about Ellen van Leeuwen's poem Paper Ships from the collection Throat. Enjoy. Hello, I'm here with Amber and Claudia. Thank you for getting up bright and early. And we're going to talk about Ellen van Leeuwen's poem Paper Ships from the collection Throat. So before I tell you what I think, I would love to hear your thoughts. So who wants to kick off?
Amber, would you like to go?
Sure, Claudia, I would love to go. Okay, so I think the overall topic that this poem is discussing is climate change and the environment and how First Nations knowledge and practices, you know, is such a valuable thing to saving the environment and fighting climate change. And how colonization and climate change are very linked, and how colonization is treated like the people of Australia, and then how the environment has been affected as well. And yeah, that's kind of my first take.
Yeah. What about yours, Claudia?
I would say my first take was looking at how Indigenous people and First Nations people have been impacted by colonisation, and then as an extension of that, how their relationship to the land has been impacted and how the environment has been affected by that. I think the structure of how the poem is written on the page was really interesting to me, because it's very it looks kind of like a waterfall, like it's flowing into, like each stanza is flowing into the other. And I thought that was really interesting, especially with when you think of climate change and the environment and how that is explained in the poem.
Yeah, definitely. The form does emulate the idea of, or a visual of, lapping waves against a shore sort of thing. And I think it's interesting too, if you think about the title, Paper Ships, and the notion of the words on the page, the ships on the water, kind of a bit of a similar idea. I also see this as it's quite political. It's a call to action, this poem, I think. Mm-hmm. And I think what you said about the impacts of colonisation on Van Leeuwen's family and First Nations peoples more broadly definitely comes through in the first part. When they talk about when we have been dispossessed more than once, more than twice by killings, disease, poison, mining companies, governments, floods and white fire, auntie and uncle fight to stay on their sacred land. They won't leave, but we don't see them on TV. So that's that, I guess, talks about the sidelining of First Nations experiences. Mm-hmm. But it's definitely, there's a focus on impacts on people, you know, rape and murder and erasure and children being stolen or orphaned. And the notion that 90% or more of our kin were lost in that line in the second stanza there. So this is about kind of, you know, I guess barely surviving. And I think it's interesting too, because compared to some of the other poems, which, like, if you think about Chirmy, which is such a, well, in lots of ways it's a celebration of the way First Nations peoples have kind of survived despite the infrastructure and things that have been imposed upon their land, this really steers away from that towards a call to action against the things that are celebrated in Chirmy. And then on the second page, there is a shift from the impacts of people specifically to, a tracing of the history of colonisation and First Nations dispossession towards country and land. Yeah. Certainly on page 129 as well, that this is everything I've learnt about paper. It comes from trees. The tree and us are one together. We breathe together. We look after trees, et cetera, et cetera. Reminiscent of which poem, that stanza?
ship-shaped hole.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That's the one that really stuck out for me, and that kind of interchangeability of language. Yeah, and that page 129 definitely draws deliberate connections between colonisation and climate change, mm-hmm. specifically. What else are you thinking?
I noticed a lot, like, it's really evident throughout the way that Van Niven, like, uses capitalization to give power and to, like, disempower things. Like, here they've written "we endeavor" and they've italicized it, which kind of, I feel like that indicates that they're referencing the ship, the Endeavor, but then they've written it in lowercase, which is, like, kind of a reclamation of the colonizing force.
Yes.
And it's, like, pointing out that they're talking about it, but making a point to say, like, it's not that important and it's not... Yeah. Well, not that it's not important, but it's not powerful anymore. Like, it isn't a driving force of, you know, like, their life and their experience.
Like,
and
I'm not giving you this respect.
Exactly, yeah.
Awesome. And I think, just as an extension on that, that what you just said about the taking away that capital letter, shifting the focus to the meaning of the word rather than the name of the ship, mm-hmm. I guess speaks to their endeavour, their survival, and their positioning as, survivors.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then also where they've written "and white fire" and they've capitalised "white", I think that really emphasises, like, the destructive force of colonisation and, like... Because, like, a fire is very widespread and it's obviously very destructive, but it spreads really quickly. And I think that by naming it a white fire, it kind of attaches that imagery onto white people and onto colonisation.
Yeah. I think as well, with traditional or First Nations land care practices, fire is used for regeneration and for, for all sorts of reasons. Mm-hmm. So the difference between a white fire, which brings such destruction, which can also be linked to climate change, and a fire built by First Nations peoples in order to care for land, completely different concept.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What else stood out for you, Amber?
The line that, like, really stood out to me the most was on page 127, the second stanza, "fight one and you fight them both", which is right after colonisation and climate change, because I think that's really, like, the political, like, heart of this poem, focusing on, like, decolonisation and environmentalism, how the two are very connected.
Yeah.
And I think that's very interesting. And then, you know, that's continued in that stanza by "elders restoring old science and medicine".
Mm-hmm.
And then the next stanza, what I think is really interesting, is the spelling of Canberra, which is not something that I've encountered before. I don't know if there's a significance in that or if this is a thing Van Niven's just made up themselves. But
yeah, I'm not sure about the spelling being meaningful in another context other than the poem. It would certainly be worth investigating. But I guess taking out the "can" from Canberra, you know, it's a disempowering kind of idea as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
Given that it was C-A-N and now, you know, "I can", they're saying, "no, you can't". I think that's perhaps worth looking at as well, that, you know, the notion of conventional spelling is challenged. Mm-hmm. So the form is significant in terms of their other poems, but if you dig a little deeper and think of the word "can" and what they're doing by taking away that conventional spelling, it's almost, another level of form that they're tapping into in order to demonstrate resistance.
Mm-hmm.
What about the element of protest in this? Because the tent embassy in Canberra has been a site of resistance and protest for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
This represents many fires, reminding us we are still here. Mm-hmm. So again, this fire still burns, a flame that still burns is an extension on that idea of white fire. Mm-hmm. So this is a slow burn. It's a burn that's been there for a long time.
Yeah.
And it's a symbolic gesture reminding us we are still here.
Mm-hmm.
Do you pick up on other elements of kind of protest or resistance? Or because I feel like this is very much about pushing back.
Yeah.
And a call to action.
Mm-hmm. I think on page 128 at the bottom, when it says, it takes all of our hands to cast this settler imaginary off, I think that's definitely like a call to collective action, and a call to resist these colonial ideals that have been enforced and lift these masts off out of the dirt. I feel like you know, that particular language, like out as if it is embedded in the dirt rather than just on top.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that speaks to how this settler imaginary and all that encompasses is like really embedded in the dirt in the way that we treat the land.
Mm.
Yeah.
And I think also, again on page 128 where it says, with tears in my eyes and determined bones, I think that kind of turns the idea of having tears in your eyes from being something of sadness to being something of determination and of just like kind of fierce like activism.
Yeah, and tears leading to determination, so sadness leading to determination, but also I guess your attachment to culture or the blood enabling you to speak the truth. So this is, again, real connection between the body and activism, and the body and culture and land, our shelter and healing. Words mean nothing without action. Language is empty without ceremony. So this is, I guess, about the notion of poetry or words being, and this sort of call to action being important but not everything, and the need for action being even more significant. I think the role of poetry as a political force is obviously strong through the whole collection.
Yeah.
If we think about Queens and we think about... I don't know, what's another poem where we see that political resistance come through? Treaty.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea of poetry being a political force for collective action definitely comes through in this poem.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, that could stand you in really good stead if you're thinking about this poem in terms of the broader collection when you write about it, because there are lots of connections to other poems. Did you notice the repetition on page 129? We look after trees, we give to trees, we never forget. What are your thoughts?
I think that's similar to the anaphora on page 126, where they repeat, when we.
Yeah, good.
Which I think there highlights kind of like separation and exclusivity. And because I think that it separates the First Nations experiences from the collective Australian experiences and points out the impact of the colonising forces and things that have happened over the past, you know, 250 years. And I think it points out how that has separated them and how it has affected them.
Mm.
And then I think on page 129, it is more of a, I would say it speaks more to like the, I would say it speaks more to how First Nations people have, how they care for the land and how they unite themselves under looking after trees and giving to trees and ensuring that they never forget trees, because like where it says here, they are our life and death.
Yeah, and there's something significant that connects landscape and trees and culture to women in this poem again, to page 128. And our women, I've been looking for you. I find you in the absence. I go back home, feel the strong defence of country through the blood and placenta of my grandmothers. So that's that connection between body and the maternal and culture coming through as well. there's also that obviously unconventional spelling of the word women too.
Yeah.
What do you think about that? Because that's got quite a contemporary history.
Yeah, from what I know about women spelled with the X instead of an E is that it kind of, it encompasses non-binary identities.
Yep.
And it more means anyone who does not identify as male.
Yeah.
And so it's just, you know, a kind of more contemporary way of using this language to, you know, define people when these, you know, old definitions aren't necessarily as useful as they once were.
Yeah, that's a great explanation. Thanks, Amber. So definitely, it's definitely an inclusive use of spelling.
Mm-hmm.
I also think this, I've been looking for you, I find you in the absence.
Mm-hmm.
I go back home with that in mind. I find that I can't quite put my finger on it, but I find the next few lines quite interesting as well in that context. Do you have any thoughts on that? I've been looking for you. I find you in the absence.
I'm struggling to like connect who the you is, like who they're talking to there.
Could even be themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a enigma.
I have more to say about the last stanza.
Okay, great. Yeah, yeah.
I think that it's super interesting in just words mean nothing without action, language is empty without ceremony. I think that that's very powerful considering that this poem, its position in the collection, it's the third last poem and it's the last long one. It's the last poem that extends it like more than one page. And I think that's really like, that's kind of like the note that Ben Evan wants to end on. It's like, you know, I'm using the personal as political, I'm using poetry as a political force, but we don't just leave this here. We need to go further.
Yeah.
We need to have action and ceremony. And I think that's super interesting looking at the Audre Lorde essay, Transformation of Silence into Language and Action.
Yeah.
And I feel like this is a way Ben Evan kind of alludes to taking it a step further and being like, because Audre Lorde is like, speaking up and finding this language is what's going to empower us. And Van Nieuwen's kind of being like, yes, but without action, this isn't going to bring about actual change.
Yes. So. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well done. Nice work. I think what you said about its position in the collection is cool too, because even though it's not the final word, if you do look at the other two, they take up a lot less space. So it is a significant... it's a significant statement to have this quite lengthy poem at the end of the collection in this way. And, you know, I think a shout-out to what happens at the end of the collection. I think Franco did it in one of his pieces recently, which was kind of cool. And the notion that we will not tire now, so this is Sand on page 131, mm-hmm. the song will keep going in us. You know, definitely captures the essence of this section of the collection too, which is throat. It's about pain. It's about the trauma, the lived trauma that this part of the collection invites readers to consider, the title being Take Me to the Back of My Throat, Take Me to that place which is painful, from which I speak, from which I shout.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's I feel like, and obviously a connection to the epigraph there as well with no one's found until they find themselves hurting in the back of the throat, which is that Patience Agbabi quote, which is, you know, again, another poetical, self-declared poetical activist, Patience Agbabi, and the connection between this part of the collection and this notion of, and I can think you can use that poetical activism if you, it's kind of a made up word, poetical, but I think if you put it in quotations and indicate to an assessor that you understand that, it's wordplay and that makes sense, because I think this poem definitely embodies Van Nieuwen's poetical activism and the essence of that. And the idea that they are diversifying the genre as well is really, really important.
Mm-hmm.
And that comes through, you know, in the use of the word women in this really substantial poem. It's another way of saying, you know, I have a broader understanding of what it means to be a person.
Mm-hmm.
I'd also describe it as, you know, quite postmodern and experimental.
Yeah.
Really, they experiment with the traditional form in this piece as well. Yeah. You got anything else to add? Because we probably have to wriggle. We're not going to have time to talk about the other poems.
That's
but,
okay.
But, yeah, before we split, let's have one final word from the two of you.
I think, again, on, like, the whole disempowerment of things like endeavour, I think the actual title, Paper Ships, really kind of portrays it as insignificant and fallible and, like it's paper. Like, first of all, paper can't withstand water. It will, like, just dissolve. And it also is blown away by wind and by, you know...
There's a fragility to paper. Can be torn. Yep,
yeah,
absolutely.
Exactly. So I think that they're really removing the power of these ships. And, like Amber was saying, like, just saying, like, not giving any respect to it anymore. Because they're not denying the significance of it, because obviously the significance of these ships has impacted the lives of so many First Nations people, of all First Nations people, for the past 250 years. And so they can't deny that significance, but they're just not giving it the respect and the power it had for so long.
I love that.
Thank you.
That's so cool. And I think titles are not an accident. Titles are really important, and especially when we move towards the, you know, practicing for the end of year exam, if you're writing about the poems from this collection, looking at the titles and the connections between titles and the way wordplay is used to denote power or disempowerment or marginalisation, I think that's a really lovely analysis of the title. Well done.
The last, the two more lines that I just think are very important are page 128, which is blood seeps through and speaks truth. I think, you know, that's a very big thing in Van Niven's poetry, and a thing that you can definitely connect to Audre Lorde, the truth telling and speaking up. And finding resilience to speak up even through the pain, through the tears in their eyes. And the blood seeps through, which is, you know, like their connection to their ancestry, that this blood is seeping through and speaking truth. It's like they're, you know, speaking with their ancestors and their connection.
Beautiful.
By speaking up.
Yeah. And just on that too, I've just thought of the following stanza, where the ships my grandmother saw didn't stay in the sea, 250 years of shipwrecks and inhaled smoke. That's another reference to that pain that you feel in the back of a throat, you know. Don't smoke, kids. yes, that idea of the speaking truth hurts sometimes, you know. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't mean you shouldn't do it. Just don't smoke, everybody. This has been an awesome chat. Thank you so much. Loved it. We'll have you again. To my students out there, if you want to be on the podcast, just let me know. In fact, just speak up. And don't let the inhalation of smoke stop you from saying what you think. That's a metaphor, by the way. All right. See ya.